from somewhere deep below the earth. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
And with our special guest tonight, Charles R. Smith, let me give you his website. Those of you who like to know it, softwar.net, softwar.net, linked up with his name right now on coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls now this entire hour on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I'll tell you one thing, Charles Smith, these are going to be some interesting times for all of us in the next few years, aren't they?
There's no question about it. In fact, it'll be the next few months. Best estimate is that Kim may test his nuclear weapon as early as June.
Will that test go on, in your opinion?
I'd give it a 75% chance that we will see him do so. And
you don't see intervention before that?
No. Yeah, it's actually in Beijing's best interest that he does this. As I've pointed out before, one of the reasons why we have this return to the motherland theme in the use of proxy states has been to build up in the Chinese population, you know, the terrible nature of America and her allies, and one of our allies, Japan, of course, is not too well thought of in China or in Korea. And therefore, if in a rational evaluation of their own defense posture, the Japanese, after witnessing a nuclear test, decide to go nuclear themselves, obviously, the propaganda coming out of Beijing as well as North Korea will be to their advantage, to their people.
Well, let me ask you, you know, the Japanese don't and won't fess up to their crimes committed during World War II to the point where the Chinese are just ballistic over this. Do you think the Chinese have a legitimate case here in terms of their hatred for the Japanese? Because, one, of course, that government will simply not apologize for some of those atrocities?
Yeah, well, they've apologized repeatedly, actually, and it's kind of getting to be a moot point. I mean, we're looking at 1945 here, okay? It's 2005. You know, we're 60-plus years later. We have to move on, so to speak, and one of the ways to do that is not to have a government sponsor riots being staged, which is essentially what the Chinese have done. This is a propaganda theme, building an enemy in their people's eyes, and the idea essentially is, you know, we can attack the same old bad guys and therefore get away with it. I mean, the net result is, of course, you can make a riot that way. And the Chinese certainly, if they didn't want those riots and demonstrations to take place, the Chinese government very easily could have stopped them in a heartbeat. We've seen it in Tiananmen Square. They'll bring out the army if they think it's necessary.
And
they didn't stop it. They started it. So this is, again, part of that return to the motherland propaganda.
Well, they may be tricking Kim then, giving him the false impression that they're backing him, and maybe all along they want him out so they can move in.
Kim is he's shrewd enough to recognize he's playing a skating game here. So he's going to try to remain useful to Beijing as best he can, and one way of doing that is by using his own self-made saber here, with Chinese help, to threaten Japan. And therefore, if Japan decides to increase their military, that plays in the hands of Beijing by being able to use the propaganda on their people saying, okay, look, the big bad Imperial Japanese are back again, and we've got to build up our empire, otherwise they will tear us asunder.
Amazing.
Keep in mind, Japan has intricate defense ties with Taiwan. If, you know, we here in the United States have the Taiwan Relations Act, where we've pledged to help defend Taiwan's if they are attacked, but there's even more of a defense relationship between Taiwan and Japan, which is one of the reasons why many of the missile systems that the Chinese have would be aimed at Okinawa and Guam and other places, American bases in Japan or on Japanese soil. The Japanese are not likely to sit back idly and watch their national security get threatened. So there is a very good likelihood they may renounce the non-nuclear option. And as I've told you before, 24 months, and they will have 100 advanced weapons. I'm talking about advanced, accurate, deliverable nuclear weapons on missiles, on cruise missiles, airdropped, and a professional force to work with it.
Do you think the Chinese will permit that to happen?
The Chinese want that to happen, because by doing that, they will be able to go back to their people and say, see, they're preparing for war, and therefore we have to redouble our efforts. We have to buy more weapons. We have to reunify the motherland with our long-lost brothers and sisters in Taiwan, even if we have to kill every last one of them to do it.
Well, but my point is, though, is before they're not going to let the Japanese nuclear arm themselves, are they?
They have no alternative. They really, short of going to war with Japan.
Well, that's what I mean. Will that happen?
Yeah, it is very likely to happen. The only alternative that we can hold out to Japan and other American allies is, let's not do that. Fully recognize that we have battle groups and missiles that can do the same mission, in some cases in a non-nuclear fashion, even better.
Where are the Russians during all this, Charles?
They're standing by and saying, okay, who can we sell our equipment to make the most money? There is some concern in Moscow, though, because remember, China, in her return to the motherland theme, is making noises about certain Siberian cities that went from one side to the other at the end of World War II. When Joe Stalin stepped off on Japan, he didn't return those cities to the Chinese territories that they were taken from.
That's true.
So, but Moscow so far hasn't acted in their own national interest. They've actually acted in how much money can we get out of this.
Well, either we're on the brink of a third world war, or my theory that we may be headed toward a one world government is afoot. It's going to be one or the other here. See any middle ground?
I don't see the one-world government, because there's just way too much competition. The Chinese military in particular, sure, they have lavish parties and foreign luxury automobiles and Swiss bank accounts, and all of that comes directly out of a RAND Corporation report that I included in my book. How often do you read the RAND Corporation saying that, you know, Chinese generals have Swiss bank accounts?
Yeah, and lots of money in it.
And lots of money. Believe me, sure, they like all that, but they like to stay in power. And if it comes down to the peasants are going to revolt and overthrow you, or you lose a couple of 100 million people and you stay in power, well, they'll take the second option. They'd be quite willing to trade, you know, 2, 3, 4 to 1, not a problem. And they've made it clear in their own documentation that if they step off on Taiwan, they're perfectly willing to take a million casualties at a rate of 10 to 1. The question here is, would America withstand 100,000 dead?
No. I don't think so. I don't think we've got the drive for that. Quite honestly, I don't.
We don't
think
play by the same rules anymore.
No, we're different kind of people.
Right, and one of the reasons why I do say that we don't play by the same rules, and this is one of the things that's brought the question into the Chinese leadership, is that if we go to battle these days, we're not looking at the old industrial strength. We're going to destroy your weapons in the field and take you on in that fashion. As I pointed out, it's become personal. You know, this isn't business anymore. It's personal, but it's still business. Look at what Saddam Hussein had to do to stay alive, running from point A to point B, because if he stayed for more than 4 hours in any one spot, it was quite likely something would come tumbling out of the sky and see him.
How many Chinese from the mainland have infiltrated the United States and at any beck and notice would take up arms and already be here on our own ground?
We probably have a couple of thousand.
I would think
so. At very least. When I was working with Colonel Stanislav Lunev, the highest defector from the GRU in the old Soviet Union, he made it very clear that the Chinese Special Forces has teams here in the United States. They have pre-positioned weapon systems. They may very well have pre-positioned even small backpack nuclear weapons here on American soil for that kind of a war.
I think you're right. Let's go to some of the phones. First-time caller line, welcome to Coast around the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
San Francisco.
Okay, take it away.
Well within reach of Korean missiles. My question is, you know, it's one of the themes of post-Cold War American interest is obviously China is our main adversary in Asia, obviously, and the world overall, and Korea obviously has nuclear arms. I'm wondering what American interests would be, you know, despite the rhetoric and the historical value of defending Taiwan in the case that the Chinese would actually invade, and also what our response would be and what possible capabilities we would have in a preemptive strike in Korea and what we think that could possibly achieve. I believe that we're actually overextended already militarily, obviously politically, diplomatically, and just how is America going to presume to maintain its interests in light of all these increasing threats? Thanks. I'll listen on the radio.
Okay. Go ahead, Charles.
Well, big question or questions. First and foremost answer, keep in mind, I believe, what is it, the number 3 and number 8 world economies we're discussing here, South Korea and Japan, are heavily involved. And if you're talking about trade, granted, our current number 1 trading partner is China, at least in the import side, but ask yourself how many Japanese cars are going to make it to the United States if there's a war or if things turn very bad and the Japanese decide to not make them anymore.
If there's a war, Charles, people aren't going to be buying cars, I'll tell you that.
In this case, you might actually find that the auto industry may benefit, especially those who manufacture lower-cost, high-mileage vehicles as compared to certain American industries, which seem to want to manufacture monsters. The key point here being the access in particular to Japanese, even Taiwanese technology. Taiwan Semiconductor is one of the leading companies in nanotechnology, and they supply the Defense Department with critical computer chips and operating systems. But that's only a fraction in comparison to the consumer items that Taiwan Semiconductor provides to the United States. Again, a critical, I'm talking about critical element of our national defense. And that's just one small area. And you want to talk about the general trade between us and South Korea, the Philippines, Japan, Taiwan, Singapore, Australia, all of those in the Western Pacific region. You know, you're looking at a good one-third of the world economy, and if things turn sour, that's going to be an awful bad scenario here from the point of view of employment and economic activity. And we've already seen the Chinese using their form of economic war with the price of yuan and their cheap imports.
Well, and the other thing he was saying is what's the benefit of defending Taiwan? What's their force?
As I pointed out, in particular, the Taiwanese are the world leaders when it comes to nanotechnology. The systems that they're currently developing at Taiwan Semiconductor are at the leading edge with DARPA and the Defense Department. This is essentially some of the future of not only our weapons, but of all of our consumer items, smart clothing, smart powders, things that can do amazing or perform amazing results, such as being able to purify salt water on a massive scale all the way down at the other end to manufacturing smart clothing that can change colors and provide virtually stain-free resistance. And that stain-free resistance could also be anti-chemical and biological warfare. You can imagine the kind of applications even in the medical industry.
We're not doing any of that here in the United States?
We do a lot of it here in the United States, but Taiwan Semiconductor is currently working with IBM, with Motorola, with TRW, with Texas Instruments, and with the Defense Department on a wide variety, a large scale of items. And this is just one small sliver, one slice of the kind of economic activity that goes on between us and Taiwan. It is a critical element, not just to us, but to Japan as well. You know, keep in mind that one of the reasons why the waters are free is because we still maintain that the international limits and signed on to this, even with China. But, of course, in the wake of the EP3 incident, we heard the Chinese government claim that the entire South China Sea was their territorial water. The last time I heard something like that was Muammar Gaddafi with the line of death in the Gulf of Sidra. There are a lot of issues, not just in the defense relationship and the relationship of, for example, getting oil to Japan. Obviously, a communist-run Taiwan would be able to check that at any one instant and close the straits, close the sea. Obviously, all of this has a direct effect on us. So we have a huge vested interest in dealing with our allies in region, the Philippines, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and then going on to New Zealand and Australia, those areas, Singapore, all of those have critical defense ties to us, even Indonesia with the Straits of Malacca. All of these are very critical in world trade and economic activity, and if anything starts to flare up, like the Chinese decide to step off on Taiwan, you know, you could expect a stranglehold to be leveled at Japan, at South Korea, and that would affect the United States greatly as well.
Well, it sounds like a lot of trouble brewing, Charles, in the not-too-distant future, doesn't it?
Yeah. I hate to say it, but we have to come to terms with this. You know, the caller said that, you know, in the post-Cold War world that we have focused in on China as our main adversary. Well, the fact is we haven't.
Yeah, we're going to have to, unfortunately.
Stay with us, Charles. The policy is appeasement. The free traders in the major industries here in the United States are the ones that are running the show. when we had the Soviet Union, they didn't have a say in policy. We didn't trade with the Soviet Union because we recognized the problem that it would reveal and that we'd be feeding a military structure.
We'll be back with Charles R. Smith and the rest of your calls in a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM.
From somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free, 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Hey, remember the original Star Trek shows where Captain Kirk would say, "Beam me up, Scotty, beam me up"? Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, scientist and author David Darling, our guest, as we talk about teleportation. The Impossible Leap. That'll be on our next Coast to Coast show, so make sure you're part of it. Back in a moment with Final Calls with our guest Charles Smith on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Charles Smith, our guest, and your phone calls. Let's go right to them. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, George. I'm a first-time listener and a first-time caller.
Well, welcome. And where are you calling from?
Lansing, Michigan.
Ah, know it well. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I got a question for Charles here. Actually, two of them. The first is, I know that China at one point was trying to acquire multiple independent reentry vehicle technology through satellite, multiple satellite launching capabilities about 3 years ago. I was kind of curious of where the Chinese are right now in that term, in that kind of technology. And also, how does the concept of leadership succession or continuity of government in China and North Korea, if there was a conflict, how does that apply to them? How do they go about leadership succession in the event of a war?
Okay, the first question, the post-boost vehicle technology supplied by our friends at Lockheed, Motorola, Loral, and Hughes has successfully been integrated into the Chinese missile forces. They have performed at least two tests of their DF-31 intercontinental ballistic missile capable of reaching the United States with three multiple reentry vehicle warheads, simulated, of course. Those system tests appear to have been successful, so we can at least infer from this that the Chinese will be deploying the DF-31 probably with a three warhead, most likely around the 90 to 120 kiloton range.
If you'd like to make a call.
Oh, hey, there you go. He must have hung up. Go ahead, Charles.
Oh, he's probably listening on the radio. Yeah, as I pointed out, the Chinese have tested their DF-31 with multiple reentry vehicles. We can thank the engineers at Lockheed, at Motorola, at Loral and Hughes for helping out. As he pointed out, they passed on the appropriate technology through so-called civilian satellite programs to the Chinese. So do expect the DF-31 to be deployed. It can strike the United States. It has a nominal range listed at around 7,000 miles, most likely with a single warhead. The three warheads are probably going to be a little bit lighter than the single giant H-bomb warhead that they've got currently attached to it. That's about a 1 to 3 megaton. That'll toast your Cheerios at about 20 miles. So the Chinese have successfully tested this, and it is extremely accurate. And again, we can thank American companies for passing this military technical data that allowed the PLA to make their great leap forward.
Treason. You sound like you think that there's going to be a war.
There's a very good likelihood. You don't arm up unless you have some intention to do something with it, especially if you're a totalitarian regime.
What if you want to use it for muscle, Charles, and simply not use it, but just say you've got it and you're capable of using it? Possible?
Then you run into the other problem is that miscalculation, or you might rub up against somebody. Accidents do happen. War is a much more nebulous game than even the generals and the leaders like to admit. You know, using it simply as muscle is one thing, but when you're building landing craft along with that muscle, that has an intention. It's like an arrow that's pointed in a single direction. Once again, I base this on capabilities. Intentions can change from day to day, but China's capabilities are on a straight line basis. Look at 2008 to maybe 2015, somewhere in that range. As early as 2008, they will have the capability of landing enough troops. They'll have enough ballistic missiles. Their Air Force will be powerful enough. Their Navy will be powerful enough. It will only get better as time goes on from their point of view in the terms of numbers and proximity.
This sounds like Armageddon, Charles, doesn't it?
Could be. I think, again, the problem that the Chinese hierarchy is facing is something, as I pointed out before, our missiles and our aircraft and our weapons, our defense posture is formidable. But our culture and our information that we, the free flow of information that we engage in, is much more dangerous. Ideas are the most dangerous things in the world to a dictatorship, because people start thinking, maybe I can run my own life. You don't want your peasants to think that in China.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there, where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia, and I have several questions, but
sure.
I also want to say God bless America, and that's a prayer, not just the motto. We're talking about Chinese foothold in the United States, to what degree they may have it. We all know they're in Panama, both ends. The Bahama Islands, apparently, right off Miami, apparently they have a port, and they were building an airstrip some years ago. You may want to comment on that. But they were also doing military exercises with Russia, and it sounds like they were all getting together. They have taken bases, just taken the Spratly Islands, which really belong to the Philippines, and that is overseeing all the sea lanes of what goes in and out from the Indian Ocean. Then there are this bases when we are consolidating, making fewer bases but bigger ones, is that easier for them to attack rather than to have fewer or more bases but smaller ones all over the country? I wanted to ask about pulse weapons, about the death of microbiologists, and about the Kamoi and Matsu Islands that was the subject of debate between Nixon and Kennedy in 1960. Who owns those now?
All right. Going around the world here, the Bahamas, I have the documented information on that. I put it in my book, and it is up on the website. That's Hutchinson Whampoa under the control of Chinese billionaire slash leader Li Ka-shing. Li Ka-shing, of course, controls the ports in Hong Kong. He's the guy that has the leases and the ports on both ends of the Panama Canal.
Yeah.
When I say Li Ka-shing, think of Howard Hughes was the CIA, Li Ka-shing is the Chinese military. He provides cover. He provides military intelligence. The former military attaché to Panama is the guy that's currently running Li's operations in Panama. Mm-hmm. So that should give you an idea what Li Ka-shing likes to do. And the Bahamas place has already been on the radar scope. The Drug Enforcement Agency has already brought up concerns about smuggling through that port. The defense people have taken a close look at it. So far, it's strictly civilian, but the kick to that is that when you start talking about Li Ka-shing, you also have to talk about the triads, and they essentially a Chinese mafia organization, and how well they work in with the Chinese intelligence people, bringing in and out personnel and information from here in the United States. So Li Ka-shing, like I said, think of Howard Hughes as the CIA. Li Ka-shing is the Chinese military. And these bases, these ports, so to speak, Li Ka-shing works very closely, for example, with COSCO, the China Ocean Shipping Company. COSCO, by the way, is a flag carrier and officially the Chinese Navy Auxiliary Marine. COSCO ships.
Didn't they want to buy they wanted to buy the Long Island shipping yard or something?
Right. It was the Long Beach.
Long Beach.
The COSCO is the Chinese Auxiliary Marine. They do participate in landing craft exercises. COSCO ships have been armed with missiles and guns. COSCO ships do carry the official military systems when they sell them, such as warships, submarines, aircraft, missiles. So when you say COSCO, think the Chinese Navy, and they're good buddies. Li Ka-shing has worked with them for satellite technology. He's acted as a very good cover because he's got lots and lots of money. He's a very rich man.
Mm.
Going in the other direction, when we start talking about the Spratlys, there is a Chinese installation on the Spratlys. The Philippines is certainly extremely upset about that installation, and because it's clearly well outside of Chinese territorial waters. They just went ahead and did it.
Yep.
This is one of those things where the Chinese, just like when they're bumping up against the Japanese, they're looking at oil and gas rights. They're very energy hungry, and they want to secure their energy lines of communications. And for example, last November, when a Chinese nuclear submarine incurred into Japanese territorial waters, that was not a mission of national intelligence for military purposes. That was a mission to inspect gas fields, which the Chinese claim, and of course are inside Japanese territorial waters.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chinese have incurred in Japanese territorial waters on a repeated basis over the past couple of years, as well as incurred into Japanese airspace. No apologies have been forthcoming from Beijing for those repeated incursions of military vessels into the recognized national territorial waters and airspace of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Expect to see more of it. That's one of the reasons why the Japanese are a little upset at the moment. The same thing with the Filipinos. Mm-hmm. They don't have the capability of, shall we say, reacting militarily, unfortunately, because they don't have the money to buy F-15s or even operate them, for that matter. That's one of the disadvantages of American technology. It's expensive. you know, if you don't have the capability, you're not going to get it. And we have to look more towards working with the Philippines, people like Li Ka-shing, Stanley Ho, and others who work on behalf of Beijing have been spreading their money around, and the Philippines is a big place for it, and that's where we see a lot of the corruption for, like, the Estrada regime was actually directed from Beijing, very, very similar to the money that was funneled into the Clinton campaign. Many of the same players from Beijing ended up in Estrada's campaign. So, you know, this is an economic war, a political war. So far, it's not a hot war, but that can change.
Let's take some more calls before we run out of time, Charles. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
The last caller stole what I was going to say. So Panama Canal, both ends are really controlled by the Red Chinese?
Panama Canal, both ends, both ports are controlled by Hutchison Whampoa, a company owned by billionaire Li Ka-shing. Li Ka-shing, like I said, when you think of Li Ka-shing, think of Howard Hughes and the CIA. That's exactly the same kind of relationship he has with the Chinese military. He has exclusive control of ports in south of Guangzhou in China. He's very close, so close to the Chinese leadership that in some documents he's referred to as Minister Li. And it's not because, you know, he's preaching from the pulpit. He has a very big dollar account. He's based out of Hong Kong. He is extremely good friends with John Zemin and his relatives. He's actually got a real estate development at Tiananmen Square with John Zemin's son. So, like I said, don't think of them as so much actual military units controlling the ports as much as we have intelligence and military operations under the guise of commercial operations. They take the money on one hand as well as work the other end of it, siphoning people, information, technology, both ways.
A lot of oil, by the way, near the Spratly Islands, right?
Very much so, and that's one of the main reasons why the Chinese made the move there. Keep in mind the Spratlys are also claimed by Vietnam and Taiwan. So don't be too surprised if there's a lot of conflict between these Asian neighbors over energy resources in the region.
They could very well have the fourth largest reserves in the world.
Yeah, and China is one of the driving factors behind the fact that our oil prices have gone up so much.
Interesting. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Go ahead, sir.
Hi.
Hi.
Am I on?
Yeah.
Hi, George. It's an honor and a pleasure to speak with both of you tonight.
You're welcome. Thanks.
My question was, it's my understanding that the first thing China would do against us would be to attack our satellites, and I was wondering how an attack like that would affect our ability to counterattack, or how some of the new GPS jamming technology would affect our ability to launch Tomahawks at their leadership.
Yes, it is true that one of the main things that the Chinese have been working on in violation of the UN Convention that they signed on to is anti-satellite technology. They have actually tested a nanosat satellite attacking satellite in their last series of manned spaceflights. It's one of the things that the manned spaceflight program actually does for the Chinese military. The flip side to that is that our military, in recognition of these attacks, has actually attempted to preposition or put together instant firing or short notice firing satellite systems. If somebody were to actually attempt to jam the GPS, as the Iraqis did, for example, that actually can work against you, because I can tune that GPS receiver to home in on your jamming device very easily. And as the Iraqis found out, their jamming devices ran out very quickly, especially when you're talking about bombs falling. So the other problem, of course, is that Not all of our Tomahawk systems rely on GPS. Tomahawk actually uses its own internal guidance systems that are extremely accurate. Think of it this way, plus or minus 3 feet at 1,500 miles. So I could pick a window and put it right through.
Well, Charles, we only got a minute left, and I want to get your take on a little summation of all this. In your opinion, then, Charles R. Smith, you believe we're going to be in a war, another war, pretty soon. Is that true?
Yeah. I believe that we're dumb enough to walk into it without stopping unless we stop the appeasers. I call them the free traders.
No way to negotiate this way? Get this thing?
No, there is no negotiating. It's, these guys recognize the only way they can stay in power is to have a war. So negotiations aren't the problem. Feeding them has been the problem. We believe that engagement is our current policy and that by sending them money, they're going to become nicer. And we've been doing that for 10 years and they haven't gotten any nicer.
No, that's not a good policy, is it?
It was called appeasement, and the guy who ran that same policy in the 1930s came back waving a piece of paper and declared peace in our time. And I'm sorry, I keep thinking of Jimmy Carter coming back from North Korea waving a piece of paper saying Kim Jong-il signed, he's not going to attack.
Well, we haven't had an attack yet, Charles. Not yet. Hey, thank you. Charles R. Smith, his website, software.net. For Karis Coburn, Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, and Art Bell. What a fast night. I'm George Norrie. Be safe, everyone.